pretty guitar piece from Jay Leach. His piece called Emmaus. And we heard two from the Women of Faith and the Potter's Hand. We heard from Rich Mullins and Screen Door. 13 minutes after 8 o'clock here in the Central Time Zone. Time to check in with Dr. Don. Dr. Don Clark, a member of the board of Creation Moments and a biochemist and a regular visitor, member of the team here every Tuesday morning. And Don coming to us from Garden Valley, Texas, where this morning it is, I don't have the weather in front of me. What is it down there?
Well, let's see. I don't have the weather in front of me either.
Well, you can look out the window,
Looking out the window, yeah. And it's bright and sunny. It has been bright and sunny for the past several days now. I think it's going to be a little bit warmer today. Yesterday, we probably had a high of mid-50s. Mm-hmm. Maybe it got into the 60s. But today, we'll probably be in the mid-70s. Okay. So things are beginning or warming up again.
Now, as our regular listeners know, you're growing grapes. So are they blooming? Do grapes bloom?
Well, they do bloom, but it's not your typical bloom that you that like a rose would have.
You wouldn't pick a bunch of them and put them on the dining room table then.
No.
Okay.
They're kind of spindly, and they're obviously very, very small.
Mm-hmm. Looks like we got 76 degrees as a high today. Mostly cloudy skies. No rain. Humidity is 80%.
Ooh. Okay. That's good.
Currently under good sunny skies, 46 degrees.
Down in Garden Valley, about 80 miles east of Dallas is where Don is. And who would have thunk that they could grow grapes in Texas? But is there another grape growing area in Texas other than your region there, Don?
Oh, man.
Oh, yeah.
Lots of them.
Our area, well, actually, they grow grapes a lot of different places in Texas. Uh-huh. But the primary grape growing area is around Lubbock.
Okay.
And the kind of the High Plains area.
Well, that's out in your direction, though, isn't it?
I mean, it's on the opposite side. North,
okay. Already.
Yeah, kind of northwest of the state, around kind of the panhandle and.
You like almost Oklahoma.
Right.
Southern Oklahoma, yeah.
Yeah, already.
Go
ahead.
Who were we talking to last week, Jim, that might have been in Don's winery?
Oh, Mark Kordick.
Mark Kordick,
is the president of the Seed Company, big Bible translation outfit. And Don, he's down in the Arlington area, and we'll have to put him in touch with you because he's a good man to know too.
Well, he said he had been through Garden Valley.
Been through Garden Valley, yeah,
and he stopped
to some
at
of the
a winery, mm-hmm. And he said,
"Oh, is it ours?"
And he said it was he's kind of a big, tall guy with white hair and a beard. And he says, that's Don. So I think you've already met him.
I think that was Santa's Village, actually.
Different place entirely. I'm wondering if he went to Fairhaven, which is actually not in Garden Valley.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
We aren't open yet for business. Ah. But hopefully we will be in May. That's the target.
Mm. Oh, May, okay.
That's our we'll have our tasting room hopefully open by that time.
Mm-hmm. Really?
You have to send some pictures for us here. Yeah.
But cool. I've got my wine in tanks at the moment. One of the wines, my Sangiovese, is ready to be bottled, but I don't have my bottling equipment yet.
What is your day-to-day kind of work then as a vigneron now? I mean, do you go into the laboratory and balance acids and bases and sugars and stuff, or do you doing test tube work, or what are you doing? Are you digging around the grapes?
Well,
right
now we are working on the winery tasting room floor.
Okay.
We are actually renovating, and it makes it kind of hard to do any winemaking at the moment because we've got we've taken everything out of the winery except for our cold room, in which case we've got some of our tanks of wine there, we're putting down a kind of a metallic epoxy flooring in the winery, and that's taking some time.
I just have trouble envisioning a vigneron doing manual labor.
Oh, when you're in a startup business, you do all kinds of stuff.
Okay, alrighty.
Do everything from electrical, plumbing, construction, mechanical, all kinds of stuff.
Okay, well, it's a good thing you're a biochemist, or that wouldn't get done either then. So I'm glad to hear that. Don, we've got an interesting tale of bones this morning here. Article from the Institute of Creation Research talks about China, where they seem to be doing an awful lot of excavating these days, finding old bones. And one of the key places in that whole huge country is what is called the Red Deer Cave in Yunnan Province. Now, I don't know where that is. I should get a map out here, I suppose. But they've been excavating there since the 80s. And the article says that researchers found thigh bones there that look to be just like bones that were found bones that were dated to 1.5 million years ago from Africa, thinking, oh, these could be the same people. Now, we could talk about things like immigration, how people groups moved around the earth a long time ago. But the fascinating part about this is that when the Chinese excavators, the scientists, the researchers, and who were also from Australia, by the way, had these bones dated, they dated to an age of about 14,000 years, not 1.5 million years. How could this be, Dr. Don?
Well, how could it be? Well, one could question their dating method. I mean, that's the start.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a couple of possibilities here. One, if you believe in the evolutionary story, then how can you have, for example, Homo habilis? Homo erectus and modern man, by the way. They didn't mention that in the article, but if you go back to the original articles that were published by these archaeologists, then you would actually find that there was human skulls also found, or parts of skulls in this same cave that they claimed to be modern man. So you had their conclusion was, but it's not mentioned in this article, but in the references in the article, their claim was, well, maybe the earlier ancestors of man actually interbred with modern man, and that's why we're finding their bones there. Mm-hmm. And so they obviously lasted. They lived a lot longer than we had thought that they could possibly live. So they didn't go extinct as quickly, for example, as what the original thinking was. Now, that's the evolutionary story or evolutionary hypothesis that these scientists actually drew that conclusion, as opposed to the conclusion that, hey, maybe this is just a variation on the kind, in this case, the kind of Homo sapiens, and maybe they all arrived at the same time because they migrated from the Tower of Babel, for example, after God confused the languages. We know that dispersed different groups went in the different directions based on the same language that they were speaking, for example. Some of them wound up in Asia, and in this case, it was the southwest western part of China that this cave is located. Then, as we've talked about before, we know that there was the Ice Age was a result of the global flood, and so there was a period of time, like 500 to 700 years after the global flood, where there was a lot of snow and a lot of ice in the northern parts of the globe as the landmass was breaking up, and peoples were migrating post Tower of Babel, for example, to these various areas. They obviously wouldn't go to the frozen areas, but they would stick with an area that was probably close to that, because that animal migration was going that direction as well. And so you had, you know, these folks trying to protect themselves from the ever cooler environment and winding up in caves, which explains, by the way, the Neanderthals that, you know, were in Germany, because they apparently, you know, wound up in a similar predicament. And and of course, you know, post-flood, there wasn't a whole lot of timber around, because the trees wouldn't have grown, you know, that quickly. So the part of the where you had to live was where you find a cave, and whatever materials that you do have, you probably were using as fuels for fire and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So this this finding, actually, you know, the bones were found in were discovered from an excavation that took place in 1989, but they were only recently looked at. And at the end, for example, yeah, I believe the article, the original article, was published in December of 2015. So at the end of last year, the paper actually came out on the findings of their investigation.
Is
of
this
these
normal for a paleontologist? I presume that you would call them to take, you know, 30 years to examine what they find. I mean, that sounds ludicrous to me. If they're excited about this, they would have researched it and had dating done right away, I would think.
Well, that's a that's an interesting point too, because apparently these bones were just set, you know, put on a shelf. Like, okay, we found this, we just put it on the shelf. They probably were cataloged, but nobody really did an extensive study until recently, which maybe, you know, indicates, well, you know, their funding ran out, or
well, there's a possibility, yeah.
Or they didn't think it was important at the time, so they had other things that they were looking at.
I suppose it's also possible.
It's possible that the
technology to date these has come a long way since 1989, and maybe now they are capable of pinpointing the age better than they were back then.
Well, possibly, but the other interesting thing is, well, if you've got these bones, why don't you date them with do some carbon dating on them? And compare that with carbon dating of the bones found in Africa, for example. Mm-hmm. But if we do that rather than looking at the sediment or the layer that they're in, then we might get a different answer. Like, gee, these bones aren't that old after all.
Mm-hmm. And we talked about that last week. That's another conundrum for scientists. Is it's the circular logic of the thing. They may carbon date a bone or a fossil. And it was found in this kind of a rock strata. So the next time they find that rock strata, they automatically assume that it's the same age. Anything found in there is the same age, which is the circular reasoning, because either the age of the fossil determines the age of the rock strata, or the other way around. They could be different. I mean, there are a lot of assumptions there.
Well, there are a lot of assumptions, and they're ignoring a piece of history that in these assumptions, in that piece of history, of course, is that, hey, there was a global flood that actually created the strata in the first place, which was so all of these marine, you know, animals that they find in these different layers, and the humans post-flood, you know, their remains that they find. You know, fit the creation narrative much, much better than any evolutionary narrative, and any narrative that says, oh, well, these layers were laid down over millions and millions of years, and we can determine that, well, this was 65 million years ago, because, look, we've got dinosaurs in this layer, but we don't have dinosaurs in these upper layers. And so, you know, that's 1.5 million years, for example, for these ancient humanoid type creatures. So, yeah, the dating method is certainly questionable, as we talked about last time. And I believe that what we're seeing here is not different species of man, but is man and its variation within a kind. Mm-hmm. Now, from the original article, you can they go into a little bit more detail as to this particular femur that was or a thigh bone that was actually found, and they say, well, you know, it's kind of small. It's small for a modern man. Well, you know, if you've got disease and if you've got very harsh conditions, for example, you've got two possibilities. One, it was young. Mm-hmm. It's from a younger adult. Two, that particular person happened to be diseased. And so, and the environment was so harsh that food was probably scarce. So if you've got a developing human person, I mean, we could just look around the globe in areas where starvation is a problem, and you find, you know, 10-year-old children that look like they've got the bone structure and the weight of a four or five-year-old.
Mm-hmm.
So we know that diet certainly plays a role in structural development of the human body. So that could have been the explanation, for example. So instead of looking for, you know, trying to understand the environment in which these people, you know, actually lived, they jumped to the conclusion that, oh, here's a missing link to the human evolutionary story, and we'll assign this, because it looks like the bones that were actually found in Africa, we'll assign it to a pre-human Homo sapiens species and call it Homo habilis, for example, and Homo erectus, not look into, for example, any environmental type of studies to say what were the conditions of these folks back then, and how might that have affected their bone structure, or mm-hmm. you know, their actual body weight and that type of thing.
I've got an article I'm looking at on the Red Deer cave people, and these particular bones, at least the ones in China that the article talks about, were found in the Red Deer Cave in Yunnan Province. And Yunnan Province is in the southwestern corner of China.
Mm-hmm.
Way down there in the lower left-hand corner. It's right across the road from Hanoi. If you stand on your tippy toes, you could probably see it. But it's just on the other side of Vietnam, and Burma is on the other side. It's kind of a triangular-shaped province, and there's a cave down there called the Red Deer Cave, and there's an article that I'm reading here said that they've identified people that don't look like or do not resemble modern humans, except in a kind of a macro look. They have two arms, two legs, that sort of thing, and they've dated them between 14,000 and 11,000 years ago. But it doesn't really talk about the issues that the article we're talking about brings up.
But it's interesting that the dating would have only been that recent. I mean, mm-hmm. 11,000 to 14,000. And the whole point of this article, in the article from the Institute for Creation Research, is that these bones were found together. Mm-hmm. And so the old concept that what they had previously identified as very primitive bones, as old as maybe a million and a half years, actually coexisted. These creatures coexisted with each other. And in the article, now most of us have there's a link to the article that we're talking about in the chat window. And if you click on that, you'll see this very famous drawing that has been referred to derisively as the fake parade. And this is that drawing that I'm sure everybody's seen, where you see a chimpanzee on the left, and then there's another ape form, and then there's a gradual evolution to modern man. That for each creature of, and there's seven different figures in this famous drawing, which turns out to have been a complete artist's conception, has nothing to do with actual evidence showing links between these species. Nonetheless, it's been accepted as fact. It's been printed in textbooks, has been there for generations now. I think it goes back to about 1916, something like that, the original drawing. And they have a big, you know, international symbol for knot over it. And the article suggests that rather than showing the chimp progression of evolution from left to right, these creatures should all be just walking together side by side. That would be more accurate.
Did you share that graphic with Don that you sent me?
I put it on Facebook. I don't know, Don. Oh, okay. Don, we tampered with this famous illustration just a little bit to illustrate Dr. Don's theory of devolution. And
when he publishes, he's going to need artwork.
Yeah,
there you go. That's right. It's interesting because this isn't the only area. Of course, you know, we're talking about it because it's a recent analysis of these bones. But there are other areas, around the world that have found, for example, modern man with older, supposedly older species of man or earlier species of man. Mm-hmm. What it actually points to, I mean, if you've got extreme variation, for example, there's a cave in Spain that there's a collection of fossils as well. And there's a tremendous variation in the bones that they have found there. Some suggesting, this is Homo erectus, and here's one from Homo sapiens, and here's a Neanderthal, for example. And they're all kind of mixed together. Rather than drawing the conclusion that, maybe they're just variation within the same kind of species here, same kind of human, and they're actually all humans, they continue to say that, this is an evolutionary evidence that perhaps even as in the previous article we were talking about, perhaps they actually made it together and everybody lived as one big happy family, different species living together.
Mm-hmm.
That obviously is less appealing than the one that you would say, they not only all live together, they're all the same. They're all Homo sapiens. This is just a variation. Different skulls have been found and they've been attributed to different types of species, for example, of man, but in fact, they're all the same species. And we look at the variation, even today, if we look at the variation in skulls of human skulls, you would say, wow, it's quite a bit of variation. We're still all, of the same species, Homo sapiens. So, I don't know what when these folks are going to come to the conclusion that, maybe we've been telling a story for all these years, and that story is probably wrong.
Well, there are some scientists who have seen enough evidence that they at least admit to themselves that, we've been barking up the wrong tree, so to speak. And what intrigues me about all this, actually what entertains me, is how many times there are wrinkles in the whole evolutionary fabric of evidence that causes them to revise previously held opinions. And yet if you look at the biblical interpretation and the biblical history as read in Genesis, you tend to find things that fit into that so easily that never changes. But the scientific explanation changes or ought to be changing constantly because of new information. It just doesn't fit anymore.
Well, and that's, that brings me to the point again that why not look at the written history of modern man, mm-hmm. whether modern or not.
Mm-hmm.
Why not look at human history as recorded, for example, in Genesis, and treat Genesis as a history book as opposed to saying, these are just myths, and these are just stories to make some spiritual point. Well, no, they're not just stories. It is an actual recording of human history so that we as humans know where we came from. that we were made in God's image, and that God loved us so much that he cared, you know, for us so much that ultimately he sent his only begotten Son to save us from our sins. And that is the story that should be being told around the world, as opposed to this made-up story of this chain from apes, for example, to man, that you see not only in science books even today, but you'll see it on the walls, and you'll actually have these that picture in museums, the university that I went to, like the Louisiana State University, in the I believe it was the engineering department, had this picture, or models of this particular monkey to man illustration. And what is that doing there? I mean, this story has been told over and over again to try to convince people ultimately that there is no God.
Well, Don, I'll have to show you that graphic. And that's the story that is still wrinkle-free to this day. It's the biblical story. And somehow the findings seem to fit. I just have not yet seen that contradicted. In our chat window, there's a link to our Facebook page at Broken Road, Broken Road page, and you'll see that graphic there. If you want to go to that and scroll down a little bit, you'll be able to see what we've done to illustrate Dr. Don Clark's theory of devolution. Don, as always, we're grateful to have you with us, and want to recommend to people that they visit Creation Moments, the website creationmoments.com, and you'll discover all kinds of things there that illustrate, that explain, that provide evidence for a young earth creationist view that conforms nicely with Scripture and can actually accommodate all this evidence that we've been talking about today. Don, you're on your way to Cuba, huh?
Going to Cuba, yes. Next Monday we leave. We fly to Miami, spend the night in Miami, and get up bright and early on Tuesday to head to Cuba. And there we'll have a pastor's conference for a couple of
weeks. Okay.
About a week or so.
Okay, well, we're losing audio on you, so I guess we're wrapping up at just the right time. Dr. Don Clark from Garden Valley, Texas, a member of the Board of Creation Moments, and Don, as always, we appreciate the time and your expertise. Thank you for joining us. And music now from Bradley Soash at the piano.